This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Mark, Roshan Kanesan and Shariat Abdullah. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Thursday the 5th of September. And how are you both doing this morning?
Not too bad, Lynn, thank you.
I'm just excited that it's Friday Junior. Diana calls it?
Yes, yeah. So our producer Diana enjoys calling a Thursday Friday Junior because she's looking forward that much to the weekend.
Oh,
and
it's
I have to admit, I feel the same.
Yeah, at least it gives Thursday a bit more meaning because because work isn't meaning enough apparently.
This is a wonderful month, isn't it? We're going to be having we're going to be looking forward to several long weekends. It's going to be a long weekend this way.
Yes,
this
it's a well. three Mondays off in September. So the only working Monday is the last week of the month. So yeah, three long holidays.
Nice.
Yeah, the way we're talking, people are going to think that we hate our jobs.
I just think that everyone is kind of looks at September and thinks, "Ooh, you know, think of all the holidays that you could go on in this meantime." Because if you think about it, you can take a very few days of annual leave and get like two full weeks off.
Work. Oh yeah, yeah. If you are very strategic and you have colleagues who have no interest in taking the same time off, yeah, sure.
Unless you are busy negotiating, for a deal between US and China or Brexit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no
summer sleep for
them,
you.
Really.
Yeah, I can imagine no sleep at all for the next however many months until it is resolved. So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch as well. But today we have lots of fascinating things to keep you company on your way to work. What are we going to be talking about?
All right. So, I mean, in our side of the world, we've been having a few slip-ups, right, when it comes to saying things that is related to religion, race, and, you know, people getting into trouble as a result of that. Beyond the causeway, they're trying something new, and it's a bit more of a softer approach. So it's interesting to just explore that and have a chat as in how they're going to do it, because technically, demographically, they're about the same as we are, right?
Interesting. Okay.
And I've got something from Vox, actually. It's talking about a New York City couple who have a little bit of a difference. She makes more than him, and how they deal with money. I think this is super interesting because I have a similar situation.
All right, and if you want to weigh in on those conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, we're going to be talking about how sometimes, you know, after that long break, you come back and you find yourself still stressed. So does that mean you're not getting the right kind of rest? You can we shall have a look at that after this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Mr. Jones by The Counting Crows, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Shariat. Now, not all rest is created equal. There are different kinds of rest that you may need in order to feel fully refreshed and ready to go back to work maybe after a long weekend, since we've got so many long weekends this month. And there's this interesting article in Fast Company that looks at the several different kinds of rest a person might need. Because I don't know about you, right? I have a typical rest day routine that I go through. Usually it's coffee in the mornings, then it's maybe go to a mall just to walk around and enjoy the atmosphere, and then it's back to the house to basically vegetate on my couch for the rest of the day. And but sometimes, you know, you do all of these things and you don't feel rested. And this article looks at why that may be, because maybe you are applying the wrong kind of formula to your rest day if you need, say, a different kind of rest.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes, like you say, right, not all rest is created equal. And sometimes the deficit that we face is not the same as what someone else would be. There is physical, there's physical, mental, emotional, and sometimes even social, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you are mentally tired, sleeping more is not going to help that as much as it would help being physically tired. And being aware of why you're tired can be essential to figuring out how to deal with it. If you're waking up feeling like a ton of bricks, then maybe you need to sleep a little bit more. Maybe you skip that workout. If you are finding it hard to focus, then you know you've got something going on mentally and you need to adjust, maybe less stimuli going to your head, really.
Yeah, so I mean, that's quite fascinating. I mean, the fact that they've broke down into several categories, and the one that I find fascinating is the social rest. basically just get. And I think, you know, I may be able to relate to this. There were points when you feel tired and you think that all you want to do is just sleep, right? But then for some reason, a good friend of yours came back and you went out and had a good time, you know, catching up.
Recharged your batteries.
And it's true enough. You wake up the next day feeling pretty good, even though, you know, what you thought you need is actually that long hour sleep, because probably you feel that you've been sleep deprived. But despite that shortened sleep, but it's just because you had a good time. It worked.
Actually, I'm the opposite, right? So I don't really like people all that much. Yeah. And one of my best friends, whenever we go out and catch up, we spend like maybe the whole day together. We go to the movies, have lunch, have coffee, catch up on the last 6 months of our lives, and then we can kind of say to each other, okay, we don't need to see each other for another 6 months, right?
Because I am the complete opposite. I need to see my friends every week. And if we don't see each other one weekend, it's like, it's been so long.
It's because for me, I have a very finite social quota and I'm very aware of that. So I need a lot of social rest. And actually looking at this list that Fast Company has put together, I think I feel more of the mental and creative deficits the most, because when I am on a weekend, what is it that I don't want to do the most? I don't want to read the news, for example, because that's the majority of my job. So it's
so hard.
Yeah, it is really hard. And because people know that you are in a media line, everybody wants to talk to you about what they've read in the papers. And I have to be disciplined and say, nope, guys, I'm not talking about this. I don't know what's happening. I will catch up on Sunday night.
See, but that's not social rest, right?
That's mental rest, more like.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. Social rest, going back to that for a second, it's about catching up with a friend where there is no pressure.
Mm.
So the minute you feel pressure in that social situation, it's no longer rest.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you feel any sort of pressure with two people, and then now like, oh my God, I got to work. I got to, you know, I've got to deal with this. It's pressure to interact with these people. That's not rest.
Right.
Rest is hanging out with your two silly friends and not having any pressure and saying whatever you want. And everyone just ribs you because it's just the way you do it. That's the way you interact with your friends. It could be going out on a coffee on a Saturday morning. It could be lunch on a Saturday evening. Everything for me revolves around Saturday. But
or it could just be sitting on a couch with your pet of choice, which is my form of getting social rest.
That's social rest right there.
For me, it's the one that you just described, either wedding or some company like gathering or something like that, right? I do like creative rest, though. I mean, I do remember feeling quite energized and rejuvenated after like playing music, band just screaming loudly. So, I mean, those are, I think, some of the lists.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest ones we face today in general is sensory stimulus, right?
Yes.
So this is one particular area where I am quite sensitive to. I do not like too much. I love hanging out. I love socializing with people. But if there's too much going on in general, so let's say it's a noisy area, the very bright lights, people are talking at my face. Mm-hmm. These are things where I start to feel like my brain can't comprehend what's going on. I'm starting to misunderstand what's going on. You're talking to me and I'm like, I can't figure out what you're saying.
Mm.
That's a good indication that you need some sensory rest. So go into an isolation chamber and just chill out.
Yeah, it's a screen as well, I think.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys felt it before. Like, sometimes it's habitual, right? You suddenly come across, like, this awesome game on your phone and you get stuck to it. And you realize that all your body starts tensing up. I mean, it starts getting all tensed up. And I think all you need is just time away from it.
Yeah, time away from the screen is really important. When I'm feeling tired like this, I don't watch TV. I try not to use my phone because immediately your eyes get stressed out. I do find listening to podcasts okay, because it's kind of, especially depending on the podcast, it can be very calming.
Yes, I do that too. I listen to podcasts. But for me, the biggest sensory overload is in crowds. So I dislike crowds. And when I'm in an extremely crowded place, which is fairly often because unfortunately I live in KL, I become this really awful, grouchy demon person of myself. because it's just too many people, it's too many conversations, it's too many people in my personal space. Mm. So that can be also a version of sensory overload. But do let us us know what you think. What kind of rest do you think you need the most? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a few messages coming up for you and then more fascinating conversations, so be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was New Light by John Mayer, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Sharit. Now, money conversations can always be a little bit difficult, particularly when you're in a relationship with someone. And Vox has an interesting article talking about just this, because they spoke to a couple living in New York City, and the situation there is that the woman in the relationship earns about three times what her husband does. And so they had this conversation with them, how they managed to talk about their money issues or lack thereof, how they managed to distribute their spending. And it's quite an interesting conversation overall, because money is always very difficult, right? And if you look at divorce statistics, money is cited as one of the main reasons that relationships actually break down. So I guess, is there actually a tried and tested way to go about this? Is there a secret to having these conversations with your significant other?
I mean, this is a great story of, of compromise, I see. I mean, basically, it's not, I think, between my circle of friends, it's always been that story that the guy would, at the end of the day, have to sort of hold the family together. I mean, that's the...
that's the traditional gender role,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, exactly. And if I were to throw that question to myself, whether or not would I be able to settle if, you know, at home, if my wife were to make much more money than I do, I would say yes. And I think I'd be an awesome stay-at-home dad.
I concur with you 100% right there. I want to do that. I'll take care of the kids. I'll go for yoga. Make sure the house is spick and span. It caters to all my strengths.
Right.
I like order. I like rearranging things. I like interior design. And I can work on my projects. I have lots and lots of projects that I can work on. I know it sounds like I'm making light of it, but I'm being really serious.
Yeah. So reading this article, I identified a lot with Vanessa, so the woman in this article, because on the one hand, she's like, she grew up in a situation where she was like, yes, you know, independence. I want to earn my own money. I don't want to have to be dependent on anyone. On the other hand, you know, it does seem like you kind of want it all because you've been incepted over the years, mm-hmm. right? And you think that, oh, you know, hey, being a stay-at-home mom sounds like it could be interesting. You'd have, yes, you know, it would probably be stressful, but if you had help, it might not be so bad. But at the end of the day, it's how they dealt with these gender roles, right? And it's how they managed to have these conversations about money without taking what they call, and I quote, the romance out of the relationship. Because I think that's also quite important too, because if you're always talking about money, then that can be quite stressful.
So, I mean, just reading this article, is that one element that you mentioned, not taking away the romance out of the relationship when discussing, is that timing, isn't it? How careful they were when it comes to just bringing up the subject. There were a lot of games that were played, and I could see. And so this is when I find that it's difficult. I mean, for a guy, if you're making less, right? At the end of the day, when things get serious, if you start thinking about the future, and you have a lot of insecurities. I mean, at least that traditional mindset that a lot of people have. How do you start? I mean, how do you start that conversation? And whether or not. When you do, there's always that risk that whether or not the other side, the person sitting on the other side of the table would be able to, you know, accept you for who you are when it comes to, you know, this situation that you're
in. Yeah, talking about money is a big deal. And even though it's difficult, it's essential to your long-term prosperity, right? Because it comes down to, if you want to have kids, then who is going to, if you want someone to stay at home, who's going to do that, right?
Yeah.
The default is that the person who's making more money will continue to make more money, right? And you kind of split that. You divide and conquer, essentially, the roles.
But I think that's become more of an accepted practice now.
Oh, yeah.
But a generation, you know, as much as 20 years ago, that wasn't always the case. It was always the woman must stay home and take care of the children, because for some reason, the accepted practice is that women are more maternal and therefore better at taking care of children.
It could also be because that they were having way more kids.
Yeah.
So when you have, when there is a situation where you are, when you are going through pregnancy, it's way more physically, it's a lot more to
physically
deal
taxing.
With, physically taxing. It just made more sense when I look at it, that the guy can go and you go and work, you go deal with this, you make sure that there's enough money for everyone, right? Because what do you have to deal with as a man, really, during the pregnancy?
Supporting your spouse.
That's your one job. That's the one thing you've got to do.
And I guess
make sure you get rest.
But I guess it's also it's also just the automatic maternity leave that is given to women, right? And that men are generally not they don't have paternity leave given to them beyond what, a week as it is right now.
But I mean, let's look at today, right? Like, how do young people talk to each other about money? Do you talk to your wife about money, Sharitz?
We do. So, I mean, we have our roles and we understand each and our strengths. For an example, I'm not as good with the details. So now we swap roles and I'm going on the long term and my wife is dealing more on the short term. Because short term has got a lot of details. Long term is just like you bulk everything up. It's like this is one
the
big budget.
The overall strategy.
Right? So it's like that. When it comes to this relationship between money, men and women, is just that mindset, I think, is just whether or not men are going to be able to resign to the idea.
Yeah, but in any type of relationship, it comes down to what you want. Even you have to talk about the different tastes, how you spend money. These are things that can cause real rifts, right? Whoever likes has finer taste is going to want to spend more money on certain things, and you're going to have to talk about how you to essentially divide that money up. This money goes to rent. This money goes to education. This money is we can do whatever we want for this. These are little things that need to be talked about, and a great place to start that conversation is listen to Ring It and Sense every Thursday at 9:30 a.m. with none other than myself, apparently.
That's right.
Yes.
Totally not being self-promoting or anything.
Because that's the show that's all about personal finance. But do let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us 0187898899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're coming up to the 6:30 news now, and to take you there, here is Thin Lizzy with Jailbreak, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Stand By Me by Ben E. King, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisan and Sharitz Abdullah. Now, Singapore has introduced a new initiative, and that is a new bill to amend the Maintenance of Religious Harmony Act. And this is to introduce a way for someone who has offended the feelings of another religious community to actually reconcile their differences through a community remedial initiative. This could include an apology, either private or public, and it could also include activities put forward by the members of the offended, and in quotes, religion, to try and address the fact that I think that a lot of this offence stems from ignorance or just from a lack of exposure. And I think this is a fascinating way to go about this addressing this religious or racial disharmony, because as we've seen here in Malaysia, our default reaction to this kind of debate is to punish the offenders and to offer punitive solutions. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think this goes much wider than that, right? It's not just about racial issues. It's any form of discontent, any form of argument, any form of debate. If your default is to shout at someone or punish someone for disagreeing with you or insulting you or offending you without understanding where that's coming from. If it was intentional, that's a different thing. But maybe this person doesn't know that they're insulting you or offending you.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding the root of why they think the way they think is essential to building that bridge. If you want to build the bridge, that is. What you want to do matters as well. So if you look at someone and judging them at face value and treating the issue symptomatically as opposed to getting to the cause, there are going to be other issues. You're not going to solve anything. You're just going to put it in a box, and this box is a literal prison cell. It really comes down to what you want to achieve.
So, I mean, look at what Singapore is doing here. I mean, so they're addressing that issue on the perpetrator itself. I mean, for example, if you slip up and you do that mistake, so there's a way to remedy that. And so they're coming out with a rehabilitation sort of program. I'm just thinking whether or not what are they going to do to the to the receiver of all this, for example, slander or abuse of insults, all those sorts. Because, like it or not, right now, what we're facing is that a lot of those out there, they sort of have this siege mentality, right? I mean, whenever someone were to throw an insult to them, immediately they feel that they're threatened. It's like as if you know, they're ready to go for war, you know, to war. So that itself, I mean, in this, at least what Singapore is doing, that part is not, has not been addressed. How is it on the other end, on that on the receiver end, you know, just to understand that, hey, look, people make mistakes, and look, this is just one of those tiny little person moment, you know, when you feel you're not at your best sort of self.
Yeah, I think this is encouraging in the sense that it's the government pushing a first step. We always see the case of it's generally either governments of the day are either reacting to the community, changes within the community, or they are taking that initiative to push change in the community. And I think that with the introduction of a bill like this, then you are starting to bring in the aspect of the conversation that, hey, this doesn't have to be confrontational. This person could have just made a mistake and they deserve a second chance and they deserve to learn about the communities that they may not know that much about. Because if you look at the spread of ethnic communities in Singapore, so the Chinese are the vast majority. If you look at the religious breakdown, so generally Christians make up the largest segment of the population in Singapore, followed by Buddhists. And I think it was followed by the Sikh or the Hindu population. I can't quite remember. So it's very much for them, the government has always been very interested in preserving this sort of religious and racial harmony because they're very aware of how things could go bad. I mean, they really only have to look northwards to us to see how terribly things can go if racial and religious tensions get inflamed. So it's, for me, this is a good first step, but it is not the be-all, end-all solution. It does have to come with community change, but who better to push that change than the government?
I personally don't like the government coming in with legislation. I personally generally believe that when it comes to speech, when it comes to expression, the government needs to stay out of it and lead by example. How do you lead by example? Your own words, your own speeches, have debates, have conversations, televise these things. Show the people how to have conversations, how to understand the other side. Don't come in with legislation because now the key thing is, what is offensive?
So I think where the government is always, I mean, the way they would sort of sugarcoat this situation is that should situation go south and people are going to start pointing fingers and a lot of them would feel that, you know, those who are affected will start pointing fingers to the government. And at the end, and that's where the cycle begins, and that's when they feel pressured to introduce a legislation. So again, I would agree. I mean, it's how do we change? How do we, you know, mold a society that would take all this sort of issues, this petty issues, with a pinch of salt, you know, as a pinch of salt.
Indeed. And this is going to be a long-running conversation because this is something that we here in Malaysia are still struggling with. But do let us know what you think. Would this sort of community remedial initiative work here in Malaysia? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a few messages coming up for you and then we'll be taking a look at what's been said in the papers. So be sure to keep it here on The Morning Run at BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was California Soul by Marlena Shaw, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Sharitz. Now, this morning, we are taking a look at what's on the front pages of the newspapers, and actually, if you look at the New Straits Times, The Edge Financial Daily, as well as The Reserve, they've all got the 1MDB trial on their front pages.
Yeah, the way the Financial Daily has put it, they're calling it economic treason. Sounds like a James Bond movie waiting to happen.
It really does, actually. If you look at, if you follow the trial and the amount of money changing hands and the amount of secret meetings that's been happening, it does seem like something fit for an espionage movie.
Yeah, that's right. And looking at how it's being done, I mean, someone has a lot of power. I mean, if you read in, you know, the whole story. And interestingly, if you look at The Star as well as Utusan, where the 1MDB story is being placed is for The Star, it's in page 5. And for Utusan is way back in page 7.
Wait, so nothing on the front pages?
Nothing on the front pages. Mm. On their front page, instead, it's a human interest story. And this is about the tragedy that happened in Sabah. I don't know if you've... it was going around on social media quite a lot as well. It's with regards to the commando that was unfortunately shot... dead as a result of an accident. I think his bulletproof vest failed, and as a result, yeah, he didn't make it.
Yeah, that's really sad, man.
Yeah, that's also a story on page 8 of the NST. And there have been a number of other stories as well. I think the NST is running a bit of a feel-good segment called Spirit of Malaysia during this Merdeka and Malaysia Day month, because they've got a story on page 4 that says old boys keep ties strong after 50 years. And but on the second page, actually, is a story about the Transport Ministry, which has said that the October 12 PSV deadline is here to stay.
Okay, and
it's also in the reserve,
I believe. Yeah, it's in the reserve as well. I think that's on like page 4. It's page 8, sorry. My numbers are not working today. But on the front page of the Malaysian Reserve, while we've got 1 MDB off to the side, their main story is about Australia and how they're going to stop exporting recyclable waste to Malaysia. Now, this is a big thing, right? This is an issue that's been we've been talking about for a while now, whether it's liners or whether it's recyclable waste. So this is good to see, and hopefully everyone will figure out how to recycle their own plastic waste. But I think it was Tun Mahathir who said that, or I can't remember, someone said this. This is actually a great business opportunity, right? If you created an industry dedicated to recycling plastic waste, you could create an entire industry around it, create high-paying jobs based on this.
Yeah.
And we could be leaders in this area instead of maybe looking at things like cars, looking at the past to inform our future.
Yeah.
We could be looking at, people want to send us their rubbish, let's monetize it.
Right. And I mean, a lot of people who are concerned with the issue are very divided on this topic. Speaking, Lynn, you mentioned about some senior folks who are very close,
preserving their ties
and so forth.
Over the years.
Our retirement age, there's been some response on that. Of course, Tun Mahathir has said that he basically agrees with what our youth and sport minister have said, that it's not to extend the retirement age. And it looks like, that has been covered in The Star on page 2.
And we're going to be talking about that as well during the 7 o'clock hour. But speaking of Tun Mahathir, he appears to be in Russia today, or at least has been this week, for the 5th Eastern Economic Forum. So the New Straits Times has covered that, because he's set to meet Russian President Vladimir Putin as well as Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. And he, apparently, on his meeting with Modi, some of the Malaysian officials didn't discount the possibility that the subject of Zakir Naik would be brought up. So
that's going to be something.
Yeah, so that's going to be quite interesting to watch. They're in Vladivostok at the moment.
Awkward meeting.
Indeed.
One more thing I think be worth noting, if you are interested in the subject, is there has been talks about either promoting a Muslim product or boycotting a Muslim product. Instead, the cabinet has come back to say to back Malaysian goods instead, which I think sounds like a sensible proposal.
Yeah, that's on the second page of the Financial Daily, and the headline reads, "Boycotting non-Muslim products, in quotes, very unreasonable, says Cabinet." Thank you very much, Cabinet.
All right, and that is all we have for you from the papers this morning, because we are heading into the 7 o'clock news. And after that, we'll be bringing you the business end of the morning run. So be sure to stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.